with the world for his own political survival. And that obviously hundreds of thousands of people, it now looks like, you know, it's maybe well be into the hundreds of thousands, are going to die, and certainly millions are suffering immediately in Gaza because of this one man's political career. And the world seems utterly impotent. So these facts, after an amount of time, do finally filter through. But when it comes to the sort of violence that, that killed Charlie, we have to really point the finger, I think, at the mainstream press and also at the social media. We just had a big racist rally with Tommy Robinson in London this weekend. And who should pop up to encourage him? Elon Musk, the owner of Twitter, what is now Twitter. He calls it X, doesn't he? So he's there egging on the racists, saying, oh, isn't it terrible? He's trying his best to divide the country in Britain. And, of course, he does a similar sort of thing in the United States. So these people are actually looking at profits coming from their organ. Obviously, they would like to use it for influence too. But they make money. The more people use the social media platforms. And so this is why I think they try and create these massive divisions. You get everybody on there and everybody fighting each other. And the more clicks that people do, the more money Mr. Musk will make. And so this is, I mean, they're virtually non-regulated, aren't they? In fact, nobody's even allowed to know about the algorithms that they use. So somebody who's calling for peace, like I do, for example, will find many of their posts, you can't view it. It says this is sensitive content. This is difficult. So what I'm saying is the mass media and the social media have caused this sort of situation where all sorts of rumours, smears can go 10 times around the world, right, have billions of clicks before the truth gets out.
All right. Well, William, some experts say that the powers that be want to keep the masses divided so people can make sure that the masses never unite and basically turn their attention against the billionaires that, of course, one of them, Tony, was just speaking about. Is this a divide and conquer type of situation, trying to keep the people from being united? And overall, with this environment, where do you think the U.S. is headed?
Well, it's absolutely the case that this is being used, the conflict, the rivalries, the heated debates are always a means of keeping people divided against what is their common interest. And but I think that the ultimate result of this may not be, I don't think, in favor of the country of Israel. Look, Charlie, as the former speaker pointed out, was moving against the genocide in Palestine, talking about it to people who generally considered themselves on the right. And of course, if we look at all the demonstrations that are happening at the universities, these are people who generally are trending toward the left. I wouldn't say that they're all leftist. People who are in the middle of the road are also upset about this whole situation. It's something that we haven't seen since the Second World War, of an entire, you know, group of people, entire nation, really, being decimated or threatened with decimation by a single power. And I think what may very well happen out of this, to the extent that people do not use this as a cudgel against their political opponents, which maybe even the administration, if they would move in that direction, would be a very bad move. But I think there is a possibility of using this, and even using Charlie's own words on this, to unite those elements who understand, one, that the country is moving in the wrong direction, and two, that what's going on internationally, in the Middle East in particular, in this genocide in Palestine, and also the war in Ukraine, which is also being fomented by those same political elites who realize that the world's population, even in the country, in the NATO countries, are being opposed to this war. They want those people divided in order for the policy to go through. I think there's a possibility that we can use this in a positive way to move forward and bring together.
And on that note, I thank both of you. I'm out of time, but I appreciate you, Tony Gosling, historian and investigative journalist out of Bristol, being with me, and also William Jones, political analyst out of Leesburg, being with us. And thank you for staying with us right here in the spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Goodbye.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
The flight information board in airports is a symbol of the fulfillment of a long-standing human desire. The desire to fly and the dream of reaching the whole world. Now the runways are full of airplanes and the airline route map is busier than ever. Airplanes have changed everything. A few hours of travel from one continent to another is only part of the story. Now global communications are influenced by the aviation industry, an industry that has overshadowed all aspects of life, from the movement of objects to the transmission of information and the flow of life. An industry that, of course, also has its dark sides, which were displayed in a strange exhibition. They could now be easily found in cafeterias, schools, and workplaces, a situation that continued until the end of World War II. Of course, the end of the war was the beginning of a new path. The plastics industry, which had been developing slowly until then, published its results in the mid-40s. A few years before the Eisenhower plan, the McDonald brothers opened their first fast food restaurant in California, a restaurant whose idea was based on providing fast food, food that was ready quickly, sold quickly, and consumed quickly. Their initial customers were truck drivers who had little time to eat, customers who soon took the McDonald brothers to the next level. The expansion of highways was what the McDonald brothers wanted. Now they could have a branch on every road to sell their products.
Oh. But there is a very real, serious message here. This is 1 month of living the average consumer lifestyle. 72 pounds of trash. The average person creates about 5 pounds of trash per day here in the United States. That adds up to about 150 pounds per month. And that's close to 1 ton of garbage per year. So now imagine for a moment what 10 years of trash might look like. That could cover this whole auditorium. And now imagine a lifetime of trash. That could be a small mountain of trash to leave behind for future generations. But what you do see here is really just the tip of the trash iceberg.
Half a century has passed since the spread of disposable containers and the establishment of fast food. Now McDonald's has 38,000 branches in 100 countries. KFC is its competitor with 25,000 branches in 145 countries. Of course, there are other cases. Important cases like Starbucks. Starbucks coffee shop chain, which was founded in the 70s, has now grown to a strange size. This company is the largest coffee shop chain in the world with 35,000 branches in 84 countries. Popular stores full of coffee and full of disposable cups. Stores that have the same old idea. Use our products to have more time. This idea inspires speed and movement. It emphasizes to customers that making a drink at home every day is neither cost-effective nor time-saving. You have to buy coffee from Starbucks, you have to save time, and you have to be fast. This claim is also contradictory behavior, according to critics. Critics say that Starbucks promises to save time with its disposable cups, but in practice, this does not happen. The daily queues for orders, if multiplied by a week, month, and year, amount to several days. Several days that seem strange when compared to the high price of Starbucks coffee. Critics emphasize that making a coffee for Starbucks costs about 16 cents, which increases to 32 cents when you add a cup with a lid and a napkin. Of course, the final price of coffee is not 32 cents. The average price of Starbucks coffee is between $2 and $3, the price that customers pay daily, and if you multiply it by the days of the year, you get a significant number. That is, double the cost of receiving nothing, an income that sells the illusion of saving time and money through disposables instead of coffee. The statistics say that each person buys an average of 70 disposable cups per year. That is, buying and throwing away 500 billion cups per year. Cups that have made the value of this industry about $13 billion. An industry in which large companies are hidden behind small factories. However, recent research shows some interesting things. Research shows that nearly 55% of the raw materials used to make disposable tableware are produced by just 20 companies. Companies that have received the most criticism for the environmental impact of plastic. The amount of waste that has recently been added to by an unexpected event.
Most people, when they see garbage, it's littering the streets, or maybe it's the pictures of all the trash piling up in the oceans. In fact, about one garbage truck worth of plastic is dumped into the ocean every single minute on Earth. So it is a lot. But most of our garbage ends up in the landfill. And I have another name for that: organized littering. It's just piles of trash being put into the earth, out of sight, out of mind. What does go there sits there for generation after generation, leaking out toxic fluids into our earth and releasing methane into our atmosphere.
"2020 felt like 1918. 102 years after the Spanish flu, it was now the turn of COVID-19, a deadly and mysterious virus that, like the flu, had a profound impact on the disposable industry. Perhaps the only businesses that benefited during and after the quarantine period were the plastic industries. Companies that now knew that polymers would be the first need of the world's people. A need for masks, gloves, all kinds of bottles, spoons, forks, knives, and of course a diverse set of disposable dishware. The use of these plastic items was inevitable. The recommendations rightly emphasized that shared items should not be used to prevent the spread. A recommendation that now, after a year, its devastating consequences are gradually being discovered. Now we can look at the significant volume of their waste around the world. Used masks, broken cutlery and cups that show up in every corner. Waste that complements an old crisis. A crisis called the plastic problem. Plastic owns our world. Wherever we look, we will see pieces of it. Drinking water, tea and coffee is heavily dependent on plastic disposables. Going to fast food restaurants also follows the same rule. Daily shopping is not done without plastic bags. The packaging of the goods we buy is completely made of plastic. There is a lot of plastic in our shoes. Clothes that are produced in the form of fast fashion at cheap prices are full of plastic fibers. Making electronic devices without plastic is meaningless, just like most household and personal appliances. Plastic has even changed our perspective on life. Now we are talking about the pollution of disposable lenses that are thrown away after use. Lenses that, like bottles, bags, and other goods, end up in nature and do not disappear. Plastics that have created a strange kind of addiction in us. An addiction that has many hidden dimensions.
This suit is pretty heavy, and I did come up with sort of a genius way to let the weight off my shoulders. I simply rest these front bags on my legs, and I can kind of just sit here and take the weight off my back. So it was about 2 weeks into the month when I had my first realization. I knew that I was going to be creating a visual of how much our garbage added up. But what I didn't realize is that I was also going to feel the weight of our consumerism with every step that I took. For me, there was no out of sight, out of mind. I had the burden on my shoulders. So, forgive me, I may have to rest once in a while.
Our addiction to plastic is cultural. Critics say that the flip side of a society that values more consumption is being infected with a throwaway culture. The current state of waste is not simply the result of consumption, but the result of a mindset that thinks that when a device is used up, it must be replaced immediately. Earl Tupper's invention of Wonder Bowls was in this direction. So was Alan Frank's invention of the lid. McDonald's, KFC, and Starbucks were also products of this idea. An idea that forces people to be obsessed with consumption. This obsession considers the reuse or lifelong use of a device despicable. In some cases, it does not even wait for the device to be used up. Instead, it quickly throws it away and thinks about replacing it. Now, looking back, the behavior of large companies seems contradictory. They used to produce goods that lasted for years, but now the situation is different. The average lifespan of household appliances or even cars is not comparable to the past. Rather than thinking about making a durable device, manufacturers make it so that it can be thrown away with the slightest problem, a strategy that shows itself more than anything else in the disposable industry. An industry that depends on packaging. The throwaway culture is meaningless without the packaging stage. Everything we consume and then throw away involves some form of packaging. A strange statistic says that durable goods that eventually become waste make up 16% of all waste on Earth, while this number is 27% for non-durable goods. Even more interesting is the level of packaging waste. That is, cups, bottles, bags and boxes. Packaging waste that makes up 32% of all waste. This number shows where the role of a cup of coffee from Starbucks is. The role of plastic bags, spoons and forks, and of course, drink bottles is also clear. A destructive role that has left the future of the Earth with a big question mark.
A lot of you might be looking at me and saying, well, Rob, maybe you should just start recycling. But the reality is that about 90% of plastics produced aren't actually recycled. And that's by design. Most plastic was never designed to actually be recycled. And even when we do recycle, it's still a very highly resource and energy intensive process. So whether it's the landfill, incineration, or recycling, these are not solutions to the root of the problem.
Flying over the oceans, you can easily see huge islands of plastic waste floating around, islands that are just part of the plastic crisis. Over the past 70 years, 8 billion tons of plastic have been produced in the world, a volume that is owed to the burning of oil and gas, and of course, air, water, and land pollution. In addition, it is said that 8 million pieces of plastic enter the open waters every day, which the result is nothing but the same islands and the sad view of the beaches. Plastics that each need at least 400 years to decompose. Pieces that have spread not only to nature, but also to our bodies. The entry of 50,000 plastic particles into the human body every year is the result of this situation, a situation known as the microplastic crisis.
Thrown out by someone and then washed up on the shore. When you think of pollution caused by plastic, the first thing that probably comes to mind are bottles like these. But a new study looking at plastic in the marine environment has made a surprising discovery. It's long been known that animals eat tiny bits of plastic, smaller than a square millimeter in size. The chemicals from the plastic can move from the stomach into the bloodstream and even build up in the animal's body. What wasn't clear, though, was where the plastic was coming from. That is, until now. The scientists found that the water in a washing machine like this one is full of tiny bits of plastic. They calculated that every time you wash a synthetic shirt like this one, around 2,000 microparticles of plastic are released. Looking at 18 sites on 6 continents, the researchers found the concentration of microplastic was greatest near large cities.
Potentially, these smaller particles could, for example, obstruct feeding apparatus, could obstruct digestion. We've shown that they're retained in the body tissues of small marine invertebrates for periods of over 40 days, which is considerably longer than you'd expect for their normal gut transit. The other concern is that these small particles might act as a vector for the release of chemicals that have been incorporated into plastics from manufacture.
Microplastics damage the digestive tracts of organisms, including fish like these. What's more sinister, though, is the way the chemicals can actually be absorbed into their bodies. It's feared as the world's population grows and there's increasing use of synthetic textiles, this pollution will end up more and more on our dinner tables.
Developed countries are the main producers of microplastics, plastic and its waste, and poor countries are the ones affected by it. Developed countries consume, and poor countries have to live with this waste on the seashore. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and Nestle are not accountable to anyone for being known as the largest producers of plastic pollutants. However, there are still efforts to stop these companies. The European Union has a long-term plan to control disposable items. Germany, Austria, and Switzerland are trying to ban the use of plastic in public events and government centers. In France, a ban on plastic packaging for fruits and vegetables has been implemented. Taiwan has been implementing structural measures to reduce plastic consumption for years, and China and Japan are also trying to replace raw materials for packaging and think about recycling. A process that, of course, has many challenges, because with our current facilities, we are neither able to effectively separate waste nor reuse it with the same quality as before. Perhaps this is why all these measures have failed to show us a clear vision of the future. Although critics see the solution in something else.
So, I want to talk a little bit about solutions, because the solutions are out there. We need massive systemic change, and the good news is that that is happening. There are examples of governments and corporations around the world showing that it is absolutely possible. I invite you to remember this. And next time you're reaching for that consumer good, ask yourself, if you had to wear that piece of trash, would you still reach for it, or would you find another way?
The solution, in their view, is to confront our own behavioral contradictions. The solution is to confront the culture of consumption, to confront the culture of throwaway. The solution may lie in using the things we buy carefully and properly, quitting our addiction to buying new things and throwing things away. Not being naive about saving time and money is the next step. A step that may force us to start cooking our own food, making our own tea and coffee, and thinking about our own role in preserving the climate and soil. The solution is for each of us to take responsibility for life, a life that we experience only once, but for the sake of future generations, we should not turn it into a disposable life.
Good morning to all our listeners. You are tuning to Iran Radio. It's very nice to have you with us. Here are some interesting facts about Islam. By the way, you're listening to Iran Radio. In Islam, the ink of the scholar is more holy than the blood of the martyr. There are an estimated 1.8 billion Muslims in the world, which is about 1.5% of the world's population. Due to the birth and conversion rates, Islam is considered to be the fastest growing religion in the world today. We'll start this hour's program with a viewpoint. The program offers an analytical roundtable discussion of various political and social issues of Islamic world today. And we round up this hour's program with A to Z of Life. The program presents an Islamic Iranian lifestyle in a variety of ways, making use of the ayahs of the Holy Quran, as well as inspirational poetry and stories.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints with me, Atta, the host of this program. Sheikh Sadiq and Brother Alavian are over here to discuss today's questions regarding Islamic unity and wahda. Brother Alavian, assalamu alaikum to you.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Sadiq, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. Happy to be with you.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate your presence over here. So, Islamic unity, a very controversial topic. Do you believe in the concept of divided ummah? I mean, in a one whole holistic look at the Muslim ummah, we have ummahs inside different Islamic lands.
I don't think it's black and white, right? That's one of the main tools of the enemy.
Okay.
Because unity is a mode of thinking.
Uh-huh.
Do you see in black and white? That's not helpful for unity. You need to understand that there's a spectrum, right? And people fall in different parts of that spectrum, right?
Right.
So you're hopeful that people will move on that spectrum toward the light. But if you just focus on one part of that spectrum and say, this is white, the rest is black, then you're seeing a lot of people in black, and you're not hopeful that they might move to the white side at some point. Right? But if you understand that this is a spectrum, I have some understanding, I have some background, I have a specific situation. If I talk to people, if I educate people, if I raise awareness, some people might move to this side. Now, what are these two sides? What is the white side? What is the black side? What is this spectrum? It's the side of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And what is on the other side? Some people might think it's like sinning or, I don't know, shaitan or whatever. I think it's dunya.
Mm.
On the other side of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, it's dunya.
All right.
So people of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, people of values, people of depth, and people of surface, people of dunya, people of momentary pleasure. So some people choose this over values, right? Now, can you push people toward the values, toward the long term instead of the short term? This is the way to unity.
It was a very beautiful point that you actually referred to, that indirectly actually. Prophet Nuh, alayhi salam, he was preaching for almost 1,000 years. Al-Fasanat al-Khamsin Aam. Almost 950.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that even some days, up to some days before this hurricane and this flood to happen, he had still hope that some people will join him. Because during all this long time, he was able to actually gather only 20 people in his circle.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But he had a still hope. I mean, whenever somebody was talking to him, he said, no, they will come. They will join more. I mean, slowly. So I want to say that the time that we are in is much more brighter than that time that he was.
Incredible. If you look at all the prophets, none of them had an ummah. None of them had an ummah.
Yeah.
Maybe except Prophet Moses.
But we see different masses in different parts of the world, even in our region. Look, Yemen is from one side, Iraq is from the other side, Iranian from this side. And different, lines of resistance have been formed up until now. Now, I mean, the enemy, the satanic power, is actually seeing itself in sort of a very serious risk and danger. So they are really threatened by this power that, I mean, this group of believers have won.
What if defending the rights of people from other country or other ethnicity will damage the unity inside your own country? This is a question. I mean, you defend the rights of the people out of your geographical borders.
Mm-hmm.
And now the unity inside your own land is going to be damaged. What about that time? Which one is prioritized? I mean, according to Islam,
the enemy actually is looking at the base and the root of this unity-making system.
Mm-hmm.
And it sees it inside, I mean, this country, let's say. And he is targeting that head to be touched and to be targeted.
I didn't get you, Brother Alevia.
Look, I want to say the core of all this unity, the core of all these united masses that have been formed recently is the Islamic Republic of Iran, no doubt. And the enemy is targeting the head of this body to target it, to actually deform the whole system. I mean, to put it to be back to the earlier time.
Isn't it the concept of defending the rights of the oppressed rather than a country or something?
No, no. Actually, all this, this unity line has
the
that
knots
has been
that brings people together, their hearts and souls together, is not
definitely.
A
look, okay. if you want to see the unity inside this Islamic country, you can actually see different reactions of people to different demonstrations, different actually events that they have inside the country, and you see, I mean, the kind of unity that people have. But if we see that in cases that we talk about disunity inside ourselves, it's due to this hypocrisy that is being made and is being injected by enemy inside us.
Mm-hmm.
Because they want this head of this body that we are talking about that is getting united. They are targeting this head to paralyze it, to actually to remove it from their own way.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say that they understood the danger, they understood the risk. Now they are working in order to paralyze this, actually, this strong body that has been formed. Look, this unity, look, don't look at it just in our region. I mean, don't look at it from Yemen, Iraq, Iran, and let's say Lebanon and other areas. Now, when you see that even in Europe and even in African countries, do you see the same voices coming up? So it means this unity has already formed, has already been formed and has already been created and is really strong. And they don't even see sort of they don't feel a sort of tranquility even inside home. I mean, they found the danger even inside their home, because every day in and out, I mean, the people are in the streets to defend what? Mm-hmm. To defend something that Iranians are actually the pioneers of this road.
Okay. And and Sheikh Sadiq, what methods must be taken and strategies must be taken by the Islamic lands in order to be more galvanized in terms of the concept of the Ummah, to be fortified and to come to common grounds? I mean, because when we are talking about the modern world has its own tools and necessities. Now we are talking about economics, now we are talking about the sociocultural backgrounds, we are talking about geographical borders, membership in the international bodies and organizations, okay?
Yeah.
So what strategies must be taken?
So if you look at the big picture, and I'm talking about the biggest picture,
mm-hmm.
of all big pictures, which mm-hmm. is the big picture of creation and the creator. All
right.
If you look at that, all you can see is unity. So unity is the base, is the default mode, right? And what creates this unity among people is not part of reality.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a war between haq and batil. Haq is real. Haq is reality, is the truth.
Okay.
And batil is lies, delusions, illusions, right? So you need to understand that this is the main tool of the enemy. This is the main tool of shaitan. This is the main tool of oppressors. They spread lies. And like it's not something that Iran has done as the leader, right? It's something that has emerged from within people. You can see if you look at the Western media, they keep calling Israelis liars.
Mm-hmm.
Like they've understood that this is one of the biggest tools they have. Like you just keep lying and lying and lying about everything. Like
yeah.
your lies are so big. Like we don't understand how you can come on live television and lie to our faces and keep a straight face.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's incredible how they just keep lying, and they don't even aim to convince you. They just want to exhaust you. Right? They just want you to keep defending and defending and defending
mm-hmm.
until you're exhausted. Right? And they keep lying. They don't want to convince you. They know that they're lying.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to back their lies by anything. They just want to keep lying and control where your energy goes. Instead of actually confronting them, you're just debating them. Right? So if you understand that, like, it's a lie machine, right? It's a propaganda machine by the West, by the oppressors, by Shaitan. And what comes as the opponent of the propaganda? It's the truth machine.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you just try to educate yourself and other people, if you try to raise awareness, which is what's happening.
Yes.
They've tried to lie about the Islamic Republic for as long as it's been around,
mm-hmm.
right? and people believe so many lies about the Islamic Republic.
Mm-hmm.
But now they see the missiles, the confrontation between Iran and Israel, and they say maybe we should rethink some of the things that we've been told by the same media that lies about everything. Maybe they've lied about this too, right?
Right.
And they come to realize the reality. So the main thing that can help people come to unity is reality, because reality is one. If we all understand what reality is, mm-hmm. we will become one.
Mm-hmm.
It's the lies, the deceptions that divide us.
All right.
And they use this deception against Shias. Like they say Shias are mushrik. They have
a different Quran.
Yeah, they have a different Quran. They
believe in prophecy of Ali.
Yeah.
in the godhood of Ali.
Yeah, sometimes.
The divinity of Ali.
They pray to the imams. They believe that they're gods. Like all lies.
Misconceptions.
Yeah.
Right.
And they even try to back this by creating Shias who might believe this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What we call British Shia, like British made Shia. All
right.
Not people who live in Britain, Shia
yeah.
who live there.
Yeah.
But Shia that is handmade, like made in the UK.
In terms of the philosophy and nurturing.
Exactly.
That's right. Okay, Brother Alavian, we got about 2-3 minutes. Any final remarks?
Yeah, just to have a sort of compliment to point on the explanations of respected Sheikh. We have recently even heard it, I mean, repeatedly in the media, that Israeli and American officials have said over and over that Israelis are becoming like the most hated nation in the world these days. So actually,
yeah,
it's bugging. And on the other side, this is lie machine that Sheikh was referring to. On the other side, we Iranians do think, I mean, when the flag of Iran is being in the hands of, demonstrators in London, in Australia, in America, does it mean that, they are Iranian revolutionaries, that they are there? No. This is the truth machine, that which is standing in front of that lie machine. So we see the reaction, the manifestation of this, the battle between the front of right and front of falsehood. And it is showing itself in the world. So we have not actually, at least we were not able to export our flags to other countries.
That's right.
But it is now there.
Now it is being exported.
It has been exported by themselves.
Because it's a message of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That's right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Brother Alavian, Shaykh Sadiq. Unity is a strategic asset that demoralizes and defeats the enemy. And this must be understood more by the people of the Islamic lands who are living under the umbrella of Islam, inshallah. That was very kind of you. Thank you much, dear listeners, also for listening to this episode of Weird Points with me, Atta, the host of this program. Please, for more information, visit our website, iranradio.ir. To another episode, God bless you all. Take care.
Shining bright, you came to us with a heart so full of love, and you showed that you're the one who cares the most, and to us you've always been so close. Everyone will say, please save me, accept يقولها لنا يوم القيامة أمتي أمتي يقولها شفاعة أنا لها أنا لها
Muscle of life.
sound will endure. IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, sincerity versus nepotism. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, welcome to A to Z here on IRIB English Radio. With me, Sister Zainab, and obviously look, this topic is, in a sense, it's always current wherever we are in the world. And you would maybe think that, if someone's talking about nepotism, this must be about the senior levels in politics or in government. And actually, not necessarily so. And I'm pretty sure that every single one of us, if I give an example from my own life, would be able to sort of pinpoint maybe several instances in their lives where they've maybe observed or been aware or just been told about some instances of nepotism. So nepotism is obviously this sort of sense that we try to get extra benefits or privileges through sort of knowing someone else. And, you know, to some extent, you know, if we're looking for a job, or someone we know is looking for a job, then for sure, you know, there's the idea of networking. And so we might, if a friend of ours is looking for a job and we maybe know someone else who works in that field, we might say, oh, okay, well, look, send your CV to so-and-so and I'll speak to them. You know, and that is maybe, that's totally normal in terms of networking. But what I'm actually talking about is, for example, if there are specific rules where, you know, we're not supposed to be benefiting from our family ties. And look, I'll give, first of all, I'll give a little example from my life, and then I'll talk about some of the maybe more sort of, let's say, official examples in life. So, for example, I was once, I was a chairperson in one organization, in a childcare organization. And then someone approached me and said, oh, because I'm the chairperson, can I sort of bump their name up in that organization so that they get childcare very quickly? And I thought, well, this is totally against the rules. And yeah, I was very surprised. So think about it. Have you actually come across examples such as that where people, through knowing someone in an organization, are trying to get privileges ahead of others or sort of be bumped up the queue? Welcome back to A to Z here on IRIB English Radio, me Sister Zainab, and so obviously I'm talking about this idea of nepotism and getting special privileges, and obviously against that is the idea of sincerity. So obviously if we have a position such that other people could approach us to get, you know, this privilege over and above everyone else, then obviously the onus is on us to follow the rules and to be sincere and be honest and sort of obviously just say to them, well, no, that's against rules. We don't do that. That is unfair. And obviously we know that in Islam, fairness and justice are, in a sense, our guiding principles, and honesty. So three things there that are really important. And you know, we see this one famous example, from the life of our maybe very famous martyr of service. Usually we talk about the martyrs of holy defense, but one of our very famous martyr of service, the former president of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Shahid Raisi, he, when he was very young, received a phone call when he was, so he was a prosecutor outside Tehran. He received a phone call for a prisoner to sort of be released, and he just sort of said, no, that's against the rule, against the law. That's not permitted. And yeah, so this is the, these are the traits that we really need to develop in us to obviously reject nepotism, and this also leads to sort of corruption, and we see that maybe in, you know, obviously in some governments around the world. There's also the you've probably heard of cases around the world where maybe people have high official posts and then they sort of try to get extra benefits for themselves, even, for example, using, I heard of a story where one government official was, for example, using, I think, one of the government helicopters to go to a private wedding. So these sorts of things could be anything. So let's just make sure we really are on the straight path and are as honest as, and just and fair as possible, inshallah. So I trust that this is a reminder for all of us, and I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on IRIB English Radio, and farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
Good morning to all our listeners. You are tuned into Iran Radio, broadcast from Tehran. Nice to have you with us. We'll start this hour's program with our morning news bulletin. Then it's time for our radio productions feature. After that, we have Israel Watch, the program critically analyzes Zionist media reports about current events and issues in the West Asia region. Then it's time for Leaders' Speech. In this program, we air a selection of statements and speeches by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, translated into English. And we round up this hour's programs with Round the World with reporters. Reporters from all over the globe tell us what is happening in the corner of the world. Listen to fascinating reports from distant lands.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.